Trenaire was looking thoughtful, and even Ducerne had to admit there was a certain logic to Clinton's argument. Still, the thing which had most impressed Ducerne about the failure of their initial attack on Caris was that sending fleets on lengthy voyages with coordinated timetables, which didn't consider little things like, weather, seemed to be significantly more problematical than sending armies on lengthy marches. "You're talking about sending 100 to 220 of our galleons past Taro to Desnare," he said now. "According to Elaine, a quarter of them would be completely unarmed. So, say we have your highest number available for the trip, 120. That means only 90 of them would actually be armed, and none of our ships are as well trained as Earl Thirsk's were. If the 60 or 70 Carisians manage to intercept them, I don't know how well our 90 would make out, Jaspar." "I don't like saying that any more than you like hearing it," he added as Clinton's face tightened. "But we have to be realistic. And it's not their fault, either. They simply haven't had the time to train."
"Robert has a point," Trenaire said in a reasonable tone.
"Yes,"
Magwer said slowly. The others all looked at him, and he held up his right hand, index finger extended.
"Yes," he repeated, "but we've got the semaphore."
"And?" Ducerne prompted when the Captain General paused again.
"First," Magwer said, "we ought to have the advantage of surprise when we actually start moving the ships. Distance alone ought to see to that, but let's assume the Carisian spies here in the Temple Lands have access to the commercial messages we allow the semaphore to pass. Or, for that matter, just that they have a network of homing wyverns to carry messages, whatever. It's obvious they do have spies somewhere in the system, right?"
Ducerne nodded, impressed despite himself. Thinking things through wasn't something he normally associated with Elaine Magwer.
"All right. In that case, we openly send orders to our squadrons all along Sing Wu's passage. For that matter, let's send them in one of the ciphers we're pretty sure the Carisians may have compromised in Delphirak or Coruscant. We order them to rendezvous at Angelburg, but we tell them that's a ruse. They're concentrating there to help any Carisian spies assume we're going to send them to Desnare, but they're to prepare to sail to Dolar. Even if the message isn't compromised along the semaphore chain, you know at least some of their crew will talk about their upcoming trip to Dolar whenever they get a chance to go ashore in Angelburg. So any Carisian spies are going to hear about that destination, and as far as preparing for the voyage is concerned, it doesn't matter whether they're going to Dolar or Desnare, really."
His eyes were beginning to sparkle now as his enthusiasm mounted.
"So, our cover story is that their preparations are to take them west. Any spies who spot them in Chantry Bay will almost certainly find out about their orders to Dolar, and we don't tell even our admirals differently until they're all ready to sail. At that point, we use the semaphore to send them their actual sailing orders. Surely that ought to ensure that we have strategic surprise. In fact, if the Carisians do get wind of their original orders, they may shift their own deployments to protect Chisholm and Coruscant. Then, once we have our ships in motion to the east instead of the west, we use the semaphore to order the Desnarians to sortie to meet them. We'll be able to tell Desnare to sail more quickly than the Carisians will be able to tell their squadrons to concentrate. So, ideally, Lock Island will still be lying to anchor in Rockshoal Bay when Rock Point and his 25 ships find themselves caught between 70-odd Desnarian galleons coming up from the south and 100 to 120 Harchongese and Temple Lands galleons coming down from the north."
"That's a very good thought, Elaine," Clinton congratulated. "And there's another aspect to it as well. We can keep track of both forces as long as they stay in coastal waters. So, if one of them hits a snag, or if it turns out the Carizians have somehow managed to concentrate against one of them, we can order the other one to turn around and avoid action.
Maguire beamed, clearly basking in the unaccustomed light of the Grand Inquisitor's approval. Even Trenaire was nodding, slowly at first, but then more firmly. Ducairn, on the other hand, still had profound reservations. Maguire's and Clinton's ideas about coordinating two separate fleets sounded good in theory, but he couldn't quite convince himself it would work out that smoothly in practice. On the other hand, Maguire did have a point about achieving surprise. If no one outside the group of four itself knew where the northern ships were really going to go, no one could possibly betray that information to Karras. And it really didn't matter how quickly the information got to Karras once the ships actually began moving, because Carizian warships as far away as Chisholm or Coruscant would be so badly out of position that they might as well have been on the bottom of the sea. They couldn't possibly reach the Gulf of Taro or the Sea of Justice before the Church's fleets had either united with one another or turned around and returned separately to their original ports. He watched the other three and realized that whatever qualms he might feel, all of them were in favor. That being the case, he wasn't going to prevent it, whatever he did. So he wouldn't try. He would content himself with voicing his own reservations, reservations mild enough he could brush them away later with a smile for his own timidity, if they proved unfounded, but sufficiently pointed to position him, if things turned out badly after all, to remind them all that he'd warned them against overconfidence. He sat back in his chair, waiting while Maguire and Clinton worked out the details to their own satisfaction. There'd been a time when Robert Ducairn hadn't worried all that much about political calculations. He'd risen to his post as treasurer mostly because he'd been the consummate bureaucrat, content to leave politics, mother churches, and secular politics alike to Trenaire and Clinton. "And the fact that we're having this discussion is proof of how well that worked out, isn't it, Robert?" he asked himself acidly. "On the other hand, even you can learn if God hits you with a heavy enough club. The real trick's going to be convincing them, and especially Jaspar, that you still don't have a clue." He smiled inwardly, behind an expression that mingled patience with just a touch of boredom. It was ironic, he thought, that his bargain with Clinton should do so much to convince the Grand Inquisitor to completely disregard any threat he might represent. That the man who was supposed to be the keeper of Mother Church's conscience regarded Ducairn's insistence on actually discharging his responsibilities as one of God's vicars as proof of maudlin, foggy-mindedness. "You just go right on seeing things that way, Jaspar," Robert Ducairn thought coldly, "because one of these days you're going to find out just how wrong you truly are."